This is Lars. Thanks again for checking out my podcast. Enjoy your day and the show, and let's make America great again.
Welcome back to Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you, and we're live today from the studios of Talk 103 FM WBRP in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where they're just a short time away from celebrating their 200th birthday as a city. And today our thoughts and prayers go out to Louisiana Congressman Steve Scalise, who was the subject of a politically motivated assassination attempt last week in the Washington, D.C. area. He has now been upgraded to serious condition, and we will be talking about him in just a moment. We've got a lot to talk about in the Northwest, but it is a pleasure to be with you. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And it's a pleasure to welcome to the studio, and this is not my studio, so I'm lucky to know which buttons to push, Brian Trasher, who's a member of the Trump Louisiana Transition Team and a senior partner in Gulf South Strategies, and the author of a uniquely named book, Laws and Sausages. Brian, it's good to be with you here.
Lars, thanks for having me on, and welcome to the great state of Louisiana.
We've been having a great time. As I told you, my wife and I are celebrating our 20th wedding anniversary this week, and we decided to make this a little bit of a fun trip, go around and sample some Louisiana cuisine, and she gets a chance to add a little bit to the local economy, so it's great to be here with you.
After 20 years, she deserves a vacation.
She does deserve a vacation, and you're absolutely she would second that notion. Hey, before we get to laws and sausages and local politics and all that, you were telling me that you're going to be in Washington, D.C. shortly, and you plan to go by and see Congressman Scalise. Tell me your thoughts on what happened last week.
Well, it's still pretty surreal to me. You know, I got up on a Wednesday morning to a myriad of messages and missed calls on my phone, and by the time I was able to surmise what everybody was telling me, I had turned on the news and saw that Steve Scalise had been shot. I didn't know if maybe he was hunting or if he just happened to catch a stray bullet in D.C. or, you know, what happened. Did somebody storm the Capitol? And then as it started to unfold, I saw that he was just baseball practice, which, you know, one of his favorite things, the congressional baseball game every year. So it did not surprise me that he was out there that early in the morning practicing for it. It was horrific. And after an hour or so, I saw the harrowing images of him being rolled on a stretcher, which made it all too real for me. It went from being just a thought to a visual, and still trying to shake it off.
Well, I've been on the road the last couple of days, but I've been following it, and I got a chance to talk that day with Congressman Garrett Graves about what had happened, who had visited Congressman Scalise in his hospital room, and he said that, you know, he thought the man was doing well, and obviously over the weekend he's been upgraded from critical to serious, but he's been through 3 surgeries. I guess he's due for some more, and the doctors are going to do everything they can for him. But I wanted to get your thought on what this says about the state of political discourse in this country, because some of us see, I see, a real pattern of people inciting and incentivizing people to go out and take violent action against politicians and people they disagree with in this country.
Yeah, I mean, it since the election, I think that there's a segment of the population that just cannot get over the results. You know, they were the ones that were kind of yelling at the Republicans saying, you better accept the results of this election. Donald Trump is going to lose and Hillary's going to be the president. And there's nothing you can do about it. And when the rug got pulled out from under them on November 8th into the wee hours of November 9th, I think that they had. Now, look, there's a lot of people who I know who disagree with Trump and don't particularly like Republicans, but would never even think about advocating for or committing an act of violence against somebody else. You know, I think that guys like this James Hodgkinson, the shooter in D.C., you know, it's a lot like a young jihadist starting out, getting recruited and radicalized on the internet, and then maybe traveling to a Mideast country like Yemen to get formally trained. Hodgkinson, you know, started out on social media. He was part of a lot of Facebook groups that were very hostile and talked very violently. And then he went to Washington with a plan. Obviously, he had a list of Republican congressmen that he planned to assassinate, and carried out this mission of his. He had a high-powered rifle. And shot 4 people.
About the rifle, the You know that at the beginning, when it was identified as an AR of some kind, that a lot of us said, well, an AR shoots a fairly small round. It's a high velocity round. Yeah. But then we find out it's chambered in .308. That's a killing round.
Yeah, and that's why it fragmented and caused so much damage to Congressman Scalise. But, you know, people wanted to immediately, like Governor McAuliffe, immediately try to turn it into a gun control debate. Told us that 93 million Americans a day were getting killed by gun violence, and I was like, oh my God, we're all going to be gone by this weekend. You know, I'm going to go max out on my credit cards. You know, and this guy Hodgkinson had a legally purchased gun, and he did not have he had a little bit of a criminal history, domestic abuse and whatnot, but he didn't have a history of mental illness. Mm-hmm. So there's no law that exists or you could have made that would have stopped him. I mean, the only thing that pointed toward mental illness is maybe the fact that he supported Bernie Sanders for president. I don't know. But gun control is only going to take guns away from people who need to protect themselves. And thank God Steve had his security detail, Crystal Griner, David Bailey, two people I've gotten to know well since Steve became whip. They've been protecting him. And, you know, we joke with Steve all the time, like, oh, Mr. Big Shot, you know, we can't beat you up anymore because you got bodyguards, you know. But I thank God they were there. And, you know, this guy, like I said, had a high-powered rifle. He hit four people, didn't kill any of them. Crystal Griner had a bullet in her ankle, had, a 45 or whatever her standard issue is, and got two rounds in his chest from about 60 yards away, from what I'm told. So I'm glad the good guys had guns.
Now, you wrote this book, Laws and Sausage. You never want to see either one or get one made. It's some practical advice to people about how to affect the process. But one of the things you've been trying to do is something practical for Steve Scalise, and that is to encourage Americans to go out and donate something very important.
Yeah, so my business partner is a member of the Knights of Columbus Marquette chapter in New Orleans, and he got the idea of, let's see if we can start a blood drive. We knew Steve was getting a lot of transfusions, and so he contacted his local council, which then reached out to the Diocesan Council, and then they got the Supreme Council up in New Haven involved, and they have been spreading this word all around through Knights of Columbus around the country. And he told me this morning that he got a report that over 1,000 pints of blood have been donated in the name of replenishment replenishment donations in the name of Congressman Steve Scalise. So we're very happy. Folks like you and other media outlets who's been helping us spread this message. We were asking people to post on social media using the hashtag Scalise Strong. And if you can get out there, if you're medically able to give blood, we appreciate everybody doing it and keeping it up. And he's getting better. And I know that it's killing him. Probably could use a better word than that, but it's really eating at him that he can't get back to work because this guy's a workaholic. And we didn't want to just keep sitting around feeling helpless. Steve would tell us, you know, get off your butts and do something if you're feeling bad.
Well,
you know,
in fact, that's the advice you're giving people in this book, is you're telling people, go out and do the things to affect public policy.
Yeah.
Do you think an awful lot of Americans feel they're even able to affect the actions of their government?
No, I think people feel disenfranchised, and the system is not set up to be very user-friendly, and that might be by design for a number of different reasons. But I see people protesting out on the streets and holding signs, and I tell them, you know, I ask them, why are you doing that? And they're like, well, freedom of speech is our greatest right. And I said, no, it's not. Our greatest right is a freedom to petition our government. That's way more important than being able to speak and say whatever you want. You're out there holding signs and marching in the streets and sometimes damaging property. But the thing is, you're not accomplishing anything. The media is paying attention to you for a news cycle, maybe. None of the politicians are paying attention to you. You have to learn the process. You have to go out there. The revolution is in the halls of government, not in the streets of America. I can promise you that.
I told you before we came on the air, I said one of the things I encourage people to do is run for a local office like school board,
yeah,
which to a lot of people could sound, well, that's kind of unimportant. Well, number one, it's doing one of the most important jobs there is, dealing with how we educate kids and how an awful lot of public dollars get spent. I'd like to see a lot of people, especially conservatives, because school boards in some parts of the country are dominated by liberals
and unions,
and they're going to push those attitudes and everything on our
Look,
kids.
We tend to bash on the millennial generation because they seem to be, for the most part, very entitled. They were always told how smart and brilliant they were, and that their ideas and their beliefs are never challenged. And so when they get into the real world and their ideas and beliefs are challenged, they don't even know how to handle it. They're like, what do you mean I'm not right? That's not even possible. And that starts in the school system during their developmental ages. And that's why I think it's a good idea that you brought up about running for school board. If elective politics like that is just not something that's in the cards for you, you know, if you live in a neighborhood that has an association, I mean, there's probably very few more dictators anywhere in the world than there are in neighborhood associations around America. Yeah, yeah, definitely get out there and challenge that old guard and get elected president of your neighborhood association and quit getting nasty letters in the mail because you parked your boat in your driveway for the weekend. You know, I mean, it starts in the elective process, in the public policy process. And, you know, Laws and Sausages is pretty much just like a remedial brain dump on how to get started. It's not going to turn you into a professional lobbyist, but it's going to give you a good head start in how to go out there, contact your elected officials and work the process.
You could actually work your way out of a job, couldn't you? If you got a process that was simple enough for people to understand and affect.
Listen, if somebody got good enough to take one of my clients away from me, I would consider it a job well done. That would mean I'm a better writer than I thought I was.
Brian, it's a pleasure to be in your state. It's a pleasure to be in this great city, the city of Baton Rouge. I really appreciate you stopping by here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And for your listeners up in Oregon, I just want to pre-apologize for what the LSU Tigers are going to do, the Oregon State Beavers tonight in the College World Series. But God bless and good luck the rest of the way in the loser's bracket.
Brian, it is a pleasure to have you here. We're live in the studios at WBRP in Baton Rouge, Louisiana today. I'll be back in studio on Wednesday. We're glad to be with you as well, and I'm glad to take your phone calls too. We'll be back in just a moment. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. You can follow us on Twitter at Lars Larson Show, on Facebook, The Lars Larson Show, and send your emails to talk@larslarson.com.
That makes a lot of sense, a lot of nonsense.
Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense, presented by the Ryan Group, where they guarantee to sell your house in 29 days or less, or they'll buy it. 29andgone.com.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
Well, corruption now lives in Oregon politics full time, it seems. The federal government has cleared former Governor John Kitzhaber and his girlfriend of corruption charges. That happened on Friday. You know, one of those famous Friday document dumps? Well, cleared may be too direct a way of putting it. The government simply decided not to prosecute. To many of us, the decision makes no sense. The governor brought his girlfriend into his public office, allowed her to operate a for-profit consulting company literally from inside the governor's office, insisted that she be included in policy meetings, and the taxpayer-funded staff take care of her every need, from hotel and airline bookings to literally emptying her cat litter box. Sylvia Hayes, whose company had previously done very small contracts, like the lighting for a public park in Bend, suddenly was receiving five-figure contracts from groups who wanted the governor's ear. And they decided the best way to get it was through his girlfriend. Hayes received payments totaling in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Oregonians got public policy bought and paid for by groups who gave Hayes money. After the decision not to prosecute last Friday, Hayes said on her Facebook page, "I have been vindicated of any acts of corruption." Actually, the dictionary definition of vindicate is, quote, cleared of blame or suspicion. Deciding not to prosecute somebody does not mean they're cleared, at least in the minds of those of us who watched her peddle influence while her boyfriend lied to voters about how hard he was working to keep her work separate from the office of governor. And since the two lived together and shared expenses, John Kitzhaber also benefited financially from her activities. But apparently, like many Democrats who commit crimes against the public, they will go without any kind of punishment whatsoever.
And that is insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
Well, I thought I'd give today's Daily Grill to the city of Portland for making a colossally stupid decision. It was made some time ago, but the Business Journal reports the city of Portland has now agreed to guarantee half of a $10 million state loan to a company called Solo Power. In other words, your public servants decided to take your money and put it at risk in a for-profit business. They are now stuck paying $119,000 a month on a $5 million debt after the company defaulted. The deal, which was brokered by a former mayor, Sam Adams, was intended to bolster the solar industry while burnishing the city's green reputation. The company, which makes a unique flexible solar panel, unique as in it doesn't pencil, defaulted on payments last fall with $8.1 million still owed. According to the Business Journal, the city began making payments this spring. Today's best emails, but you can send more, to talk@LarsLarsen.com. John writes in, Lars, when somebody of the left is attacked, the left screams about guns or harsh rhetoric or the Tea Party or Sarah Palin. When somebody on the right gets attacked, the left solemnly calls for unity. When somebody on the left is attacked, the attacker's past is parsed for any indication of connection to the right, which is nearly never there. When somebody on the right is attacked, the attacker is a nut, and the Trump climate is at fault. As always, it's about guns. I feel bad for the Congress folks, but they did have security to protect them. We do not. Glad to have you with me today and glad to take your phone calls and emails on this Monday at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarsen.com. And I want to tell you something. I think that Nigel Jaquis has done absolutely extraordinary reporting on the situation involving Governor John Kitzhaber. And I also think that this decision last Friday not to prosecute Kitzhaber comes at a politically timed moment. And here's what the time is. When every new president comes into office, especially if he is a president of a different political party than the previous president, it is absolutely routine to replace every single U.S. attorney. There are 70 of them around the country. Well, that hasn't happened yet with Donald Trump for a number of reasons, one of which is that it took an extraordinarily long time to confirm his Attorney General Jeff Sessions. But I think that the man who's currently in charge of the U.S. Attorney's Office in Portland saw an opportunity to take one for the team, to go out and make the decision not to prosecute Kitzhaber. I don't think this was done based on the law. I think it was done based on politics, that he knew that he would probably soon be out of a job and replaced by somebody else. So much like Ms. Yates, Sally Yates, the acting U.S. attorney before Jeff Sessions came in, decided to do whatever she could to sabotage Donald Trump, I think that the current U.S. attorney in the city of Portland made the decision that John Kitzhaber would not be prosecuted. And if this tells you something about how the government is operating, if it doesn't, it should. What it tells you is that corruption on the part of Democrats is almost never punished. It is almost never investigated. So while the Democrats are screaming loud and long about how they need an investigation of Russian collusion, which after 12 months they found no evidence of, and yet corruption like this by John Kitzhaber and Sylvia Hayes goes unpunished, think of what that tells you about your government. You're listening to the Lars Larsen Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larsen Show. I get the unique opportunity of doing my show today from Baton Rouge, which turns 200 years old today. It's a great city. We've got an affiliate station here, and I'm glad to be here with Talk 107.3 WBRP. And it's great to be with you as well. If you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it happens right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarsen.com. Some crazy things have been going on up at Evergreen College in Olympia, and you understand that college seems to be a little out of control. But now, perhaps now, they're starting to get the message that they have to rein in the actions of not only students, but their teachers as well. Well, Joey Gibson joins me now from Patriot Prayer about a protest that is planned there. Joey, welcome back to the Lars Larsen Show.
Thanks for having me.
Joey, so tell me what it is that you're planning or what you were planning last week in this protest, pro-Donald Trump Patriot Prayer protest.
Well, it actually had nothing to do with Trump. It was more about standing against the hatred that's been going on that campus, the racism. You know, it would be different if it was a private college, but it's, you know, it's publicly funded. So we just wanted to go down there to take a stance and to let them know that, you know, you're not allowed to kick people out based off of the color of your skin. You know, pretty simple stuff.
Joey, I know my answer to this question, but I'll ask you. Why does it make a difference that it's a taxpayer-funded institution at Evergreen?
Well, as a libertarian, I do believe in private companies and private organizations to be able to do what they want, you know, as long as it's not fat, as long as you're not hurting someone else. But in terms of, you know, our tax dollars and what we're paying for, you know, the money that we work hard for and we give away to this public institution, you know, we have a say, you know, and the government isn't allowed to endorse an organization that is going to be racist or is going to discriminate.
So what does it mean to you when the Evergreen State College then says in advance of your protest, they decide to cancel all activities on campus? What is that? Why did they do that?
Well, I would think I would do the same thing if professors were standing in the classroom saying that a white supremacist group is coming to the campus, then maybe I would do the same thing. There's tons of lies being spread. And that's another thing that we're kind of sick of, too. We're sick of, no matter who you are, we're sick of people spreading lies to put fear in people's hearts. They scared so many students before we came up there because students thought that we're going to come up there and we're going to be hateful and we're going to quote-unquote cleanse the campus. And so that's why, you know, they do stuff like that, like close it down. And there was a lot of students who were really afraid of us. And when they had the opportunity to speak to some of us, it blew them away. They had no idea that we're Christians, we believe in God, we believe in peace and love. And, you know, we don't care about race.
So why do you think the college was doing that?
I think that they're afraid of our message because I don't know what's going on in these colleges, but they're doing everything they can to control the narrative. We have a simple message, and it's extremely sexy. We're talking about freedom, and we're talking about love. How easy is it to promote that? It is so simple, and people are drawn to it. People right now are filled with so much negativity in their lives, surrounded by so much negativity, that when people come in with a positive message, they're thirsty for it and they love it. Think about it. Think about how hard it is to sell communism. How hard is it to tell people, hey, you need a government to tell you what to do at all times, compared to these other people who come in and say, you as an individual, you are powerful, you are strong, your abilities are endless. And this is why we believe in freedom and we believe in love and we believe in the power of the human and the heart and the soul.
Well, Joey, in my experience, at least not experience, but in my reading, the only time people have been able to force communism is when they do it at the point of a gun, and socialism generally the same.
Well, I think that it happens through cultural brainwashing over time. You lead people to believe that they're victims and that they need to be taken care of. That's why it's been done on purpose. I believe it's been done on purpose to make our children grow up to believe that they need handouts, to grow up to believe that they need to be taken care of. You know, we're turning into a nanny state. And eventually we keep giving more power to the government, giving more power, you know, and they do it by welfare, you know, giving out money so that they'll get your votes. Eventually they'll become so powerful that if we do try to rebel, they will use a gun.
Do you think any of these colleges are beginning to absorb your message? I mean, their reaction in deciding to shut things down, they clearly didn't want to see your message on campus. But on the other hand, you can only do that for so long. Is there a way to finally get that message across, perhaps to the board of trustees that runs the college, that sees this stuff from a distance and is appalled by it just as you and I are?
Yeah, the only way, I believe, is to get the students to within to begin to stand up. It can't come from the outside. And that's the thing, is that's what opened my eyes, is when you watch the media, you watch Fox News, Tucker Carlson, whatever, you see it looks like the whole campus has gone insane, but it's not true. It's just the majority of the professors, and then a small percentage of the students are acting out, right? A small percentage of the students are being loud, being annoying, and they scare all the other students into being silent. And so that's my goal, is to go onto these campuses or even liberal cities and to get the normal, moderate, intelligent people who've just been staying quiet, get them to get a little bit of courage and to stand up for what they believe in from the inside out.
Because I could imagine being 18 or 19 or 20 years old again and being on a campus like that and understanding that if you stood up and said, hey, Joey Gibson and his group have a right to protest just like we do, I could imagine being shouted down by this small but vocal minority of students who are really making the campus a lousy place for everyone else who's a student there.
Absolutely. I had a conversation with a really smart gentleman. He is actually a member of the Black Lives Matters and on that campus or in Olympia. And he came up and talked to me, was really excited to talk, had really good things. But the one thing that blew my mind is he said, We are so sick of these Antifa members, these anarchists who are all white. We're sick of them running around screaming racist all the time. And so when we talk about racism, no one listens. And he also said, when we protest and we don't want to break any rules or laws, right, because we don't want to get arrested, these anarchists show up, they'll destroy property, and they'll disappear, and then the police arrest us. You know, and he doesn't know what to do because they're afraid to stand against them because all they, what they do is they use threats, right? They use threats of violence to scare people into silence. And so I see this as an opportunity to be able to reach out to liberals, to anyone who believes in peaceful protesting or believes in freedom of speech. I see this as an opportunity to kind of connect with them to help, you know, get rid of these punks, get rid of these extremists. You know, the extremists on both sides of the aisle are tearing us apart from each other.
You know, Joey, I think one of the things some of these groups are going to have to do, and I apply this to conservative groups as well as liberal groups, is perhaps when you show up to protest, if you show up wearing something that will identify you as being a vetted member of the group, then the group that's holding the protest can say, this is open to our members. We don't want other people coming in and making us look bad. If, on the other hand, the group is actually counting on the Antifa to show up so that they can cause trouble, but the main group doesn't have to take the blame for it, I don't admire that kind of behavior at all. So I think it's incumbent on the groups that are holding the protests to begin to screen their own members and make sure that if you're going to say that this is a member of our group and that person goes out and causes trouble, your group should take the blame or the credit for it, whichever one is appropriate.
Absolutely, but what's that? That's going to require courage. It's going to require people willing to stand up for what they believe in, regardless of the consequences. And that's probably the biggest problem in our country right now, on everywhere, with every group. People are letting fear factor into their choices right now. Basically, the liberals, especially in Portland, the peaceful protesters, they right now they're afraid to stand against the anarchists and Antifa, even though the protesters basically cannot even have a protest without police breaking it up, because they're afraid to kick out the anarchists and Antifa who will break the law and destroy property.
Well, like I said, Joey, if the day of the protest they say anybody who's an identified member of our group, we're all wearing purple T-shirts today, and then you kick anybody out who's not a member of your group. If you're the one with the permit, you get to take the responsibility for policing your own group. Joey, keep up your good work, and I really appreciate the time today. And I'm glad that you did what you did last week, although I'm sad to see Evergreen College back down.
Thank you.
You bet. Joey Gibson with us with Patriot Prayer. Glad to get your phone calls and emails. You might wonder, occasionally I take the show on the road. And we're down here in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. My wife and I decided we'd come down together. She doesn't travel with me every time I go out of town. But we got a chance to sample some great food down here, get a chance to see some of the great hospitality. And, of course, we'll be traveling back tomorrow. I'm glad to get your phone calls and your emails. We'll talk about the issues of the day. And when we come back, Burgess Owens, NFL Super Bowl champ and the author of Liberalism, How to Turn Good Men into Whiners, Weenies, and Wimps. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Back to The Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you live from the studios at Talk 107.3 in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Glad to be here and glad to take your calls as well, not only from the Pacific Northwest, but also from the Baton Rouge area. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. Only one time in my life have I been able to wear a Super Bowl ring, and it was only because of Burgess Owens, who allowed me to wear that ring, and boy, it is a heavy chunk of metal. Mr. Owens, good to have you back on the program, sir.
Lars, good talking with you again, my friend. I look forward to our conversation, sure.
I'll tell you what, there are an awful lot of people out there who probably ought to go out and get themselves a copy of your book, Liberalism, How to Turn Good Men into Whiners, Weenies, and Wimps, because you didn't do that as a dad. You did the right thing by your kids. You made sure that they knew what it was like to be a real man and to actually go out and do what you're required to do, take on your responsibilities.
Well, I tell you, Lars, what I think it was actually focused on is what has always made our country great. The way I was brought up, and I just go out there and man up to do the best I can to be a participant and a contributor, that's the American way. And we just need to get our country back to that. I mean, it is not an accident that our country's as great as it is, has been for all these years. And as we look at where we're heading off to right now, we just have to look at our leadership. and recognize we're not being taught the way that our ancestors were taught. So we need to get back to basics.
Well, and you, you've got an event going in Oregon where people are going to get a chance to come and see you in person.
This coming weekend, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a good opportunity to spend some time with some good folks in the Oregon and Portland, Oregon area. Looking forward to just doing our best to turn our country to being the great society for all Americans that it is designed to be. So I hope folks show up. We're going to have a good time. And I look forward to shaking hands and signing autographs and handing out books, whatever we need to do to get it done. But we're going to have fun time with it for sure.
So what kind of message are you going to bring for folks in these times where people are apparently so troubled that some of them decide to even pick up a gun and go after a member of Congress?
I guess the biggest message, and this is the theme of my book, is that we are at a point in our country where we have a great division, but it's not black and white. It's not what I went through back when I was a kid going up to Southern and segregated South America. I mean, South part of the country.
The southern part of America, Florida. Yeah.
Yes. Tallahassee, Florida, the deep south. What we have now, very simply, is we have an ideology that's trying to usurp the way that we do our business here. We have the socialists, atheists, and liberals that are trying to actually change the way we look and view each other. We're a country that's for all the times we've been here, all the years we've been here, has been looking at each other from inside out, not outside in. We need to get back to that, and we do that from our basic Judeo-Christian foundation that allows us to really understand that we have great potential, and we need to stop looking at each other as enemies, as the socialists would love us to do.
Well, you overcame all of that, and at the time, back in the day, it was a tough haul. These days, I think that we've got a lot more protections built in place to make sure that everybody in this country is treated equitably. Mr. Owens, I'm sure that people are going to love to hear your message, and I'm glad to recommend that they go to the Oregon Republican Party fundraising dinner that's coming up. And if you want more information, we can send it to you by email. Mr. Owens, thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you, Lars. Appreciate it, buddy. Have a good one.
You bet. Glad to have you on the program. That's NFL Super Bowl champ and author Burgess Owens. Glad to have you with me. If you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, we've got a lot to talk about today. I want to know, first of all, as I was on the road, I got a lot of emails from you after the decision on Friday night that the federal government would not seek prosecution of former Oregon Governor John Kitzhaber and his girlfriend Sylvia Hayes on influence peddling charges. They're not going to go after them at all. They've essentially run out the clock, decided not that the statute of limitations had been reached, even though it was very, very close, but not to go after them and not to prosecute them, even though it seemed very clear to a lot of us that the two of them had enjoyed a lot of money that came in from what appeared to be influence peddling. Now we're never going to know. Now, John Kitzhaber has said that he blames the media for his problems, not his own actions, not his own decisions, but the media and the fact that people found out what he was doing. And that doesn't seem very honest to me, because I think John Kitzhaber knew there was a problem with what he was doing. That's why he held that news conference just before he ended up resigning, not too long before he resigned, in which he explained, "We did everything we could to keep Sylvia's business separate from my work as governor," which, of course, was the purest kind of hogwash, because he allowed his girlfriend to run a for-profit business out of the governor's office, which is not keeping it separate. He allowed her to receive hundreds of thousands of dollars from groups that wanted to influence the governor's point of view. So I put it up as our quick poll question. You'll find it online at LarsLarson.com. Should the federal government have cleared Kitzhaber and his girlfriend of influence peddling? You can vote on the quick poll there. And while you're there, visit my trophy room at LarsLarson.com. Post a picture and a paragraph about your latest hunting or fishing adventure. It's powered by Northwest Armory, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show live from Baton Rouge today.